You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
A lot of things have been happening recently. We had this glorious weekend where I think many people started thinking about gardening. It happens to be Earth Week because this Wednesday is Earth Day. And there's, of course, the news that there's going to be a new garden in the back of the White House. And all of that got us to thinking about Gerard Lordahl, who's been a regular visitor to this show. He's the director of the Open Space Greening Program for the Council on the Environment of New York City and has been through how many administrations? You started coming on our show over 20 years ago.
Exactly. 22 years this year.
So this is a nonpartisan job. You've been through Democrats, Republicans, and a mayor who seems to be a member of all the parties at different times.
That's right. We came into formation in 1970 under Mayor Lindsay as a voice for the environment in New York City.
And has your mission always been pretty much the same?
It has. We started out in environmental education, and many people know us from the green markets. We have about 50 green markets around the city that we help manage, bringing in farmers from the region to provide New Yorkers with local produce. And then we work with the hundreds of community garden groups around. There are tens of thousands of community gardeners.
Now, I've always been unsure as to how to pitch these conversations because our audience is so varied. There are people out there who live in tiny apartments, and then there are people who live in places where they have lots and lots of a backyard. Or, in fact, we've even gotten some calls from farmers over the years. So I guess we're going to have to keep all of that in mind.
Yeah, and as you mentioned, it's a national movement now. With the president planting a garden in the White House lawn area, we have people talking about growing food because of the economic crisis. People are looking for ways to grow their food in their own backyard.
Does it matter whether you have a backyard or whether you could just do it on a terrace?
You could do it on a windowsill. You don't have to have a backyard. You could do it on a terrace in container gardens. You can do it on a rooftop. You could do it in a community garden.
And then there is the problem of sun. Some places have lots of sun. Some places have no sun.
For most vegetable gardens, you need a minimum of 6 hours of direct sunlight.
A listener, John, left a question on our show page. He wonders whether all vegetables require a lot of sun. He says he can grow beans, peas, and tomatoes, but he'd like to try tubers, carrots, broccoli.
Yeah. The minimum amount of sun for vegetables would be 6 hours, and that would be for your leafy crops, things like basil and parsley and spinach. Your fruiting crops, things like tomatoes, peppers, eggplants, those require 10 to 12 hours of direct light. But for the listener, root crops in the middle, about 8 to 10 hours of direct sunlight for turnips, for radishes, things like that. But you have to have at least 6 hours minimum for veggies.
Well, John also seems to want to know whether he can grow really expensive vegetables so he can save himself some money. We can't grow truffles, can we?
No, but, you know, now some of the heirloom tomatoes, you know, when you go to the market to buy some of the large heirloom tomatoes, the two-pound markets, they could cost you a couple of bucks. So why not consider planting some heirloom seeds like the Brandywine tomatoes from seed? This is the time to plant from seed, things like your tomatoes. And then because April is such a fickle month, we can have snow. The frost-free date for New York City is just about now, April 20th. So be careful. Any of the summer vegetable crops like tomato, eggplant, peppers, they don't go out in the ground until May. But you could start them indoors from seed now. What you can put out now are things like lettuce, carrots, radishes, spinach, beets, Jerusalem artichokes.
Cucumbers, I hope, because I just
put
out some cucumbers.
Well, yeah, you need to be careful of your cucumbers in case we get a frost, Leonard. You might want to cover them with something like a plastic soda bottle or a little plastic saran. If we do get a frost, those vulnerable vegetables could get hit with a frost snap.
I could always just take them into the house, can't I?
Oh, you can. Yeah, protect them.
I just saw a film about Lyme disease, and there are, it seems to me that for many people who care about being able to garden, there are two problems occurring right now, too many deer and too few bees.
Exactly. And, you know, I wanted to share some things with your listeners. Many people struggle with the problem of controlling deer in their garden, and many of the people up north have this problem more than those of us here in the city. But you might want to consider planting certain crops or plants that the deer don't like. There aren't many because deer are voracious eaters, but looking at some research from Organic Gardening magazine, they talk about the fact that scientists have discovered that deer do not eat plants like yarrow. They don't like any plants that have strong scents to them, like mints, any of the mint family plants. Rosemary is something that deer don't eat. Sea holly, which is sort of like a thistle. Spider flower, cleome, is something they don't like either because they have small spines. And lamb's ears. Many people know the perennial lamb's ears. So there are six plants that if you do have this ever happening problem with deer, try planting yarrow, cleome, rosemary, lamb's ears, and sea holly, and that could actually be your garden, and the deer won't bother them.
But that means you can't grow other things, or will they keep the deer away from the other things?
No, they're not a deterrent. Deer will eat everything and anything, and many people buy fencing.
Are people in your field concerned about the dying off of so many bees?
Absolutely. And if you want to be eco-friendly and do something to help our native pollinators, I have some suggestions for your readers, for your listeners. Planting certain...
I think they read too.
Yeah, I bet they do. Many of our pollinators, like the honeybees and the butterflies, they're attracted to certain colors. And again, the blues, the lavender. So if you could plant flowers like pansies, things that have this attractive color, yellows, whites, purples, blues, violets. These are the types of colors that attract things like your honeybees. And many people know bees need nectar and pollen. They need nectar for the energy, and they need the protein-rich pollen to feed their young. So if you can provide this source of food in the garden, that would really benefit the bees. Another suggestion is to add a little sea salt. If you have a water bird feeder, you could help the bees along a bit by adding some sea salt or a little wood ash from your fireplace. That sodium gives some mineral benefit to the bees. So these are some eco-friendly suggestions for Earth Week for your listeners.
Our number here is 212-433-9692. My guest is Gerard Lordahl, Director of the Open Space Greening Program of the Council on the Environment of the City of New York. And should we take some calls?
Yeah, that'd be
okay.
Great.
Okay. Our first caller is Richard from Brooklyn. Hi, Richard.
Hi. I'm part of the East New York Farms, actually, Hearts and Hand Farm in East New York, part of the East New York Farms.
Right. We're aware of East New York Farms.
You're aware of us. Uh-huh. It's weird. We've been in a lot of publicity, and we've never gone after publicity. We were in Bill Moyers last year, and the UN came up, and it seems newspapers caught us because we have beehives now. But the real reason I called is that in Chicago, they've been fostering green gardens on the rooftops, and it takes care of water drainage, water going into the streets, and particularly when it rains, and also lowers the temperature of the cities. And I was wondering if you could talk about that.
Sure. I mean, green roofs have been happening for many years in New York City. They can happen in bigger ways. For us, the difficulty is public access. We're an organization that works on greening public open space. So the difficulty for us with green roofs are what public benefit, or where can we find a situation where there's a publicly accessible rooftop? Many people have private rooftops, but they're not always...
corporations.
Yeah, and corporations. So they're often for the individual corporation.
Isn't there an added problem that some buildings aren't structurally sound enough to put all that soil on the roof?
If you take a basic green roof course, the first thing they tell you is you need to contact an architect or an engineer, and you have to make sure that your building roof is to code, that it could withstand 25 pounds per square foot on your rooftop, because wet soil is very heavy. And
Could you also talk about how a lot of community gardens, the contracts are coming up?
Wait, could you let us finish on the roofs? I know you're hot to talk about a lot of different things. Go ahead.
Well, sure. So the roof gardening is one issue, and we can do more roof gardening. Homeowners can do more green roof work. What the listener's calling referring to is the fact that there is a resolution in City Council to make sure that these community gardens stay preserved for the future. And as we know, back in 2000, there was an issue where the city was thinking about putting these gardens on auction, and many of them were threatened. So now this legislation that was in place to save these gardens is now expiring in 2010. And we want the city council and the mayor to support the preservation of community gardens. And we're asking Christine Quinn to do that as well.
Well,
that's Resolution 1033 of the City Council.
That legislation was enacted because Rudolph Giuliani had alienated so many people, and I suspect the situation, the environment, is a little different today, isn't it?
It is different, yeah. We're at the table, and we're discussing, and many of the people in City Hall understand, and the City Council understand, the value and the benefits of community gardens.
Let's take some more calls. Our number here, 212-433-9692. Eileen from Park Ridge, is it? I almost said Park Slope. Park Ridge, you're on the air. Eileen, are you there?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm from New Jersey, actually.
Okay, well, congratulations. It's a nice, the Garden State. We're talking about gardening.
Certainly. Well, northern New Jersey is, yes. I was just curious. I have an asparagus bed, and I'm always telling people about the wonders of an asparagus bed because it's one of the few perennial vegetables.
Mm-hmm.
And once you plant it, you can get 30 years' worth of asparagus.
Right.
So I'm wondering what you think about having an asparagus bed.
Well, when I teach the vegetable gardening class, I talk about how you should separate your perennial vegetables. And there's more than just asparagus. There's rhubarb. There are some of your herbs. But you have to be strawberries, some people put in their vegetable garden. These are perennial plants that have an underground root system that come back year after year. Asparagus is great. You could buy them at the local markets. You could buy them at your local garden center. You just have to realize that when you first start them, you have to develop a strong root system in order to get the asparagus to harvest, and it usually takes 2 years for that to happen. Asparagus gets huge, as you know. You grow it. It's the size of a person, 6 feet high, 3 feet wide. You need a large space. You have to have full sun, 12 hours of sunlight, and it's great. It's a great experience harvesting those asparagus in the early spring, but it does take a little more planning.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Patience is the key.
Patience.
Thank you so much. Along these lines, a listener in New Jersey wonders, can various herbs be put in a large pot, or should they be separated in individual pots? Basil, cilantro, rosemary, oregano, should they all get their own pots?
No, you don't have to have them in their own pots. Herbs, as long as they have the same or similar cultural requirements, as long as they share the same amount of sunlight and soil requirements, you could put rosemary with tarragon and lavender in the same pot. Herbs like good sunlight also. They also like well-drained soil.
And their roots all go to pretty much the same depth? Is that why they can all live in the same pot?
Well, they're not antagonistic towards each other. Some herbs are annual, you should be aware. So things like parsley and basil, they're not going to have an overwintering root system, whereas lavender and sage and your mints are perennial. If you plant anything with mint, the mint roots will take over. So that's a reason why you would not mix your herbs. Some of the more invasive herbs, like mint, will take over the entire pot and shade out all your other herbs. Rosemary and tarragon, and tarragon's a little it needs to be cared for, but if it has the same hardiness and soil requirements and water requirements, yes, you could plant them together.
My guest is Gerard Lordahl, who's the director of the Open Space Greening Program, Council on the Environment of New York City, and we are taking your calls at 212-433-9692. You can also leave a comment on our show page at WNYC.org. We will continue right after this. We're back with Gerard Lordahl, who's a horticulturist, and I used to say floriculturalist. The same thing, isn't it?
Yeah, you know, horticulture it sort of includes flowers and plants. It's the art and science of growing plants in general. But then you can get more specific. If you grow florist crops, you're more a floriculturist.
You have a different kind of relationship with this than most people in the field, because you're dealing directly with people who are trying to grow.
Right.
As the director of the Open Space Greening Program, you deal with all the community gardeners.
It's really exciting. We have tens of thousands of community gardeners in the city, so we work with them hand in hand, side by side, helping them develop these public open spaces. We're also a public information nonprofit organization, so we give out information like we're doing today to the general public. For instance, if any of your listeners are interested in doing pruning of their fruit trees, it's good to know that this is the time to prune your apple trees, your cherry trees, and your fig trees. And when we're talking about Earth Day, why not plant a row of blackberries or think about growing raspberries in your garden?
Well, won't the birds eat those things?
That's what we want to encourage for Earth Day. We want to encourage wildlife to the garden, and you could plant enough for yourself and for the wildlife as well. The other thing is pruning grapes. Many people in the city have grapevines, and it's a good idea to prune grapes. Just remember that your grapes are born on this season's young green shoots. So you don't want to prune off those young first season shoots, or you'll be pruning off your fruit. And then lastly, if you have a fireplace and you're thinking of putting that wood ash in your garden, just realize that wood ash from a fireplace contains potash, and that tends to raise your soil's pH. It's great for lawns and roses and bulbs and root plants, but you don't want to put it in a soil that already has a high pH.
Can you do something to balance off the pH?
Yeah, sure. To lower your soil pH, you could add compost, and that has a lot of acid in it, and it would reduce your soil pH.
And if people have space, building your own compost heap can be a lot of fun, can't
it? Sure, yeah. You could use discarded wood pallets. You could use wire, any of those things. And again, even if you're a windowsill gardener, a lot of these ideas can be incorporated into a terrace garden or a container garden or even a window box garden.
We go now to, is it Matthew? Matthew from Astoria. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. So I have one of those little 5-foot by 10-foot plots, like a lot of the townhouses out here have in Astoria. Right now it's packed full of tulips. I'm growing stuff for the summer, stuff that likes it warm in pots inside the house, in the hall, cannas and begonias and things like that. I also have some ranunculus. I know they like it cooler, and right now they're in a bunch of pots in back of the house. Is it too cool for them right now? Should I bring them inside?
Well,
are they okay with this 40-odd degree weather?
Yeah, check the temperature. Anything below 50 is a little risky.
Okay.
But as long as it doesn't go down to freezing, your cool crops like your cabbage, your cauliflower, your kale, your pansies, your ranunculus, because it likes it cool, will survive in high 40 degree temperature, so that's okay. But just be aware, if it does go down in temperature, you want to cover them with something like a container or a paper bag or newspaper to insulate them.
Okay?
Okay.
Thank you. A listener from Park Slope writes, sent in this comment. She says that after 9/11, a steady dust came down for 2 weeks in her backyard. Is it safe to plant in the backyard again, or should she still use planters only?
Well, you know, many of us, our offices are down on the Lower East Side, and we dealt with that dust as well. And, you know, living in a city, living in an urban area where you have a lot of airborne and soil-borne pollutants, we have to take precautions. Cornell University talks about taking precautions such as rinsing your leafy vegetables in a 1% vinegar solution. So any of your Swiss chard, your lettuce, avoid feeding leafy vegetables grown in an urban area to children under 6, because their bodies are less developed to fight off lead poisoning. Peel your root crops. If you know you're living in an urban area in a community garden with a lot of heavy traffic, there can be the potential of contaminants in the soil. So peel the root crops. With fruiting crops, they found that if you do have contaminants in the soil, of a tomato, let's say, the contaminants get taken up by the roots and get bound up in the leaves of the tomato plant and not the fruit. And we don't usually eat tomato leaves, so that's less of a problem. Keeping your soil pH correct will help keep these contaminants at bay.
Merrill from Hastings-on-Hudson. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks for my call. This is just for listeners who might be interested at Let It Be Apiaries is working on a project to repopulate dying bee populations, and they are rooftop hives in Manhattan, and information on them can be found at letitbee.com for anybody who might be interested in type of expansion or, you know, if they have a rooftop garden that's accessible.
Do they pass that name by Paul McCartney?
Well, I think they talked to John Lennon first, you know.
Thank you so much for that. And Leonard, I brought you some honey from one of the local farmers, and this goes exactly to your listener's point. David Graves is the beekeeper at the Union Square Green Market, and he has several hives on private rooftops, and he produces rooftop honey. And one of the issues in this Earth Day discussion is to encourage people to stop using pesticides, because Penn State scientists have found that there's a new chemical, a group of chemicals, neonicotinoids, that are throwing off the memory of bees, and it's used to kill grubs in the lawn. So a lot of these synthetic chemicals are really detrimental to the earth, and we should avoid putting them down to kill grubs because they're affecting the bee population.
So how do you kill the grubs?
Well, you know, you could pick them out by hand. You could avoid, not worry about the grubs, let them live, let them be, as we said. Plant red clover instead of lawn. The other thing is, unfortunately, I have a cell phone myself, but cell phone towers, there's a lot of research that talks to the fact that cell phone towers are contributing to the colony collapse disorder of honeybees. So these are issues we should be aware of.
We thank you for your call, and we go now to Gus from Brooklyn. Hi, Gus, you're on the air.
Hey, how are you doing?
We're okay.
Excellent. I actually just heard about 10, 15 minutes ago that someone called in talking about green roofing, and they said they either did not know of any in the city or that there were not any in the city, and that, you know, Chicago was kind of the leader in that market, correct?
Well, something along those lines, but of course you're going to tell us that's not true.
Yeah, definitely. I work for a company called Green Fillet, and we'll be at Earth Day this coming Friday and Saturday with actually a model green roof that we've constructed. And I just want to make sure that everyone knows that New York City has recently passed that tax tax abatement legislation that gives home buyers and anyone who wants to put a green roof on their roof $4.50 in tax rebate for every square foot of green roof that they install on their building in all five boroughs.
Yeah, that's great information. And what we were saying before was that publicly accessible green roofs was the challenge. I know the Bronx Courthouse has an amazing rooftop. But yes, I'm glad you brought that up, that incentives for private homeowners to do rooftop gardening.
My guest is Gerard Lordahl, who is the director of the Open Space Greening Program, Council on the Environment of New York City, and this is WNYC, WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. We're taking your calls at 212-433-9692. And, Gerard, we're getting lots of calls and also people writing in with the same question. How do you keep squirrels from eating flowers and tomatoes? Another listener from Fort Greene says, he has a squirrel. Last summer, squirrels ate his cucumbers and tomatoes.
Right. Yeah, wildlife is a challenge. I live in Brooklyn, and I have problems with raccoons. I have problems with squirrels, cats. We have to learn to live with the wildlife because we have inhabited their habitat. And we have to learn how to live amicably with them. What a lot of community gardeners do is they put out a pile of peanuts that the squirrels will prefer over their vegetables. The other thing you can do is when you plant your bulbs in the ground, which the squirrels often end up digging up, you could put hardware cloth around the tulip and the daffodil bulbs so that when they're digging, they hit the cloth before they hit your bulbs. So physical barriers help. Putting out some different type of food that the squirrels like. I know they have bird feeders now with these squirrel preventers. When the squirrel sits on the bird feeder, it registers the weight and it spins the squirrel around and throws the squirrel off the feeder, which is pretty funny. But then the other thing is dried blood. Some people have success with dried blood, and you put it down, you wet it, and the squirrel runs away.
Another listener suggested coyote urine, although he said you should wear gloves and be careful because it really smells awful.
Right. So lion urine, all these predator urines, they say, will help. But once the water or the rain comes, it washes away.
Do we get them to do it into a test tube? I mean, how does this work?
Don't ask me. I have
ask
no idea.
Ask them to check themselves out for diabetes and then sell the stuff?
I'm sure people have, you know, very good careers collecting this urine.
Let's take another call. This listener is Ellie from downtown Manhattan. Hi, Ellie.
Yeah, hi, Jared and Leonard. Great show, as usual. So, as a fluke, last year I had one little old sweet potato, one of the organic potatoes left on my cupboard, and it had grown roots, and I threw it into a big pot that I have on my terrace here on the 26th floor, Lower Manhattan. And lo and behold, I had this crop of little potatoes within a few months, and a beautiful vine, and we ate the potatoes, nobody died, and we all loved them. Now, this year I want to plant it seriously, the sweet potatoes, but when is the best time to plant them?
And should she do the same starter thing that so many people do, which is, you know, put them in a little jar of water and watch the roots grow.
Yeah, you don't have to do that. With tubers like your potatoes, you could just take pieces of the potato or the tuber itself and plant it in the ground, and as she found out, you'll get roots.
I didn't
roots.
Even do that.
You just threw it in the soil.
I threw a whole potato in there.
Yeah.
I had over 20 potatoes.
Would that be true of regular potatoes as well?
Yes, that's often the way they do it. Seeds take a lot longer. But the point I wanted to make is now the soil is still moist and a little cold, and your summer-loving crops like potatoes and tomatoes and eggplants and zucchini, you should wait to put them in until about another 2 weeks, the 1st of May. It's a little iffy now. As we said, April is a little fickle with the temperature.
Right.
So put them in the ground about the 1st of May, and you'll have good success in a sunny spot.
Okay, thank you. We have very ambitious listeners. Emily wants to know about growing or planting winter wheat in off-season.
Well, winter wheat is they use it as a cover crop, and cover crops can be sown now and turned over into the soil in mid-June. And that's particularly if your garden's going to get started later, but ryegrass, soybean, red clover, mustard, these are all good choices for a cover crop that can be sown now, Emily.
She wonders whether you should use plastic to prevent weeds instead.
Plastic is acceptable, but you have to understand it's a petroleum product and it stays in the, you know, you want to remove it from the earth. You don't want to keep it in the garden and it only lasts for one season, but it's an excellent barrier for weeds, but it's not an organic product. So use mulch, use newspaper, use old carpeting as a replacement for your black plastic mulch. We want to try and cut down on our production of plastic as much as possible.
Another caller. This one is Val from Yonkers. Hi, you're on the air.
Hey, you know, I have a question. I'm listening to you guys talking about the importance of encouraging bees and, you know, pollinating bees, but I have a tremendous problem with wood-boring bees. So I'd like to encourage the pollinating bees, but discourage the wood-boring bees because they're actually ruining the structure of my deck.
Sure. And I don't know. We would have to talk to an entomologist. I'm not sure how to attract one bee and discourage another. But I do know that, there are certain things. We have to have these pollinators in order for us to get our fruit. And a lot of people don't realize that. The orchards depend on the pollinators. The vegetables depend on the pollinators to make the fruit possible that we so enjoy all season long.
Okay.
Thanks.
Sorry, don't have much to offer.
Beth in the Bronx wonders, can I put a raised bed on top of untested soil? If so, what depth to avoid the problems with the soil?
You should test your soil, and the University of Massachusetts will accept soil samples for a small fee. You could check them out online. You send a tablespoon of soil that you collect 6 inches from the top, and you send it to them dry in a plastic bag or container, and they will test it for heavy metals, lead, cadmium, and mercury. They'll send you pH, and they'll give you recommendations. The raised bed can be put on top of that. Generally, we use 2x10s, 10-inch high for our community garden raised beds. For larger crops like corn, you want a deeper soil. But generally, a foot of soil will grow most vegetables and perennials. If you go to trees and shrubs, you want 3 feet.
Since we're talking about trees, we have Bruce from Norwalk, Connecticut on the line. Hi, Bruce.
Oh, hi, Leonard. I wanted to ask your guest, I have two beautiful dwarf peach trees, which are in bloom right now, and I'm worried that the bees don't get to my peach trees. If possible for me to artificially pollinate them with like a little painter's brush or something. I noticed that they do this in China a lot. And if I could do that myself, just in case. I'd like a lot of peaches this year.
Yeah, sure. I mean, you can manually help pollinate, you know, the flowers of your peach trees. It's very labor intensive, and most people just can't do that. But many of the orchards do that kind of manual pollinating. But I don't have the details on it. I would suggest you Google it or check out a reference for that. But that's another good suggestion. Thank you.
Now, yesterday was the first one-day flower market in Brooklyn, but there are others planned all around the city?
Yes, exactly. We have the Council on the Environment is doing, for the first time this year, flower markets to encourage people to plant flowers around the city. And we had one this weekend, which I was at the Borough Hall Market, this past Sunday. We'll have the next one Saturday, May 2nd in Staten Island at the Snug Harbor Cultural Center, in Queens at Atlas Park on May 24th, and in the Bronx at the Riverdale Y on Arlington Avenue on June 7th. These are regional farmers who grow flowers, and you can go there and get a great price and talk to the farmer and buy some plants to help pollinate.
Now, they're all plants. They're not selling seeds.
These are all grown plants that green market farmers are growing organically, regionally, and you can plant them in your community garden, in your backyard, et cetera.
Now, before you go, we should talk about your email address and what people can send you.
Yeah, absolutely. And the last thing I wanted to mention, if anyone, Mother's Day, we're having the community gardens in the Lower East Side and in Brooklyn are having Mother's Day portraits, free photos for Mother's Day in the community gardens on Mother's Day. And if you want information about anything we talked about here with Leonard, you could contact Mike Resney at greening@cenyc.org. That's our office.
They can also contact you with that.
They could contact me, and our email is greening, G-R-E-E-N-I-N-G, @cenyc.org.
And we have a link to that on our show page at wnyc.org. Gerard, I want to thank you so much for stopping by to talk to our listeners and to offer your expert advice. It's always a pleasure to see you.
Enjoy the honey.
Thank you, and I'll enjoy I went to the green market this weekend and got some things to put on my deck. I'm hoping to have tomatoes and other vegetables later in the season.
Excellent. Happy Earth Day.